Good morning. I'm Christopher Purdy, delighted to welcome you all to today's edition of All Sides Weekend, where we talk about books. This is one of my favorite shows to do, and we have a great panel to talk about books today. So get your pens and pencils and your questions ready for Robin Nesbitt, who is the manager of the Columbus Library Hilliard branch. Robin comes to us every show with the latest of the library's quick picks, and she will explain what that is in just a moment. Cassie Rose, the adult of the group, is WOSU's book critic. Her blog, which is indispensable for seriously for anyone who loves to read, is called thelongestchapter.com. Thanks, Cassie. Welcome back. And I'm delighted to welcome back to the program Lee Martin, who is OSU's professor of English. His new collection of short stories is about to come out. It's called The Mutual UFO Network. I'm in the midst of it. I can't put it down. I'm very upset in a good way. This is a riveting read, so I'm delighted that Lee Martin, by the way, this is just his latest book. He was a finalist for the Pulitzer Prize in 2006. I'm delighted you could join us today, Lee Martin. Thank you.
Thank you.
So let's start with you. First of all, tell us about the Mutual UFO Network. First of all, the title is great.
Well, and it has nothing to do with it has nothing to do with UFOs. Let's make that clear right away. Well, the title story features a scam artist who creates images meant to convince people that there are such things as UFOs. But really, it's a collection of stories about alienation, about the longing for connection. All the stories sort of revolve around that theme.
There's one about the good bad house too, which is almost it's about a long marriage, and you always give us unexpected twists or unexpected for me at least in reading them. I think it's important in reading the works of yours that I've read that you really have to pay attention to every line.
The story you're talking about, The Last Civilized House, it was the Rumpus ran it yesterday. So if anybody wants a sneak peek at the collection, they can find it there. I'm sort of – and really in that story, nothing much happens in the present time. An elderly couple find out that there are footprints in the snow around their house and somebody's been peeking in their windows. And then they go uptown and do some shopping and they come home. Everything happens in the past. There's a secret that they have that they have to confront because of this person who's looking in their windows.
I didn't know that you've written a couple of volumes of memoir. Give us a little preview. First of all, tell us a bit more about yourself. We know that you're a Pulitzer Prize finalist. You're a prolific writer. You're on the English faculty here. What else? What's informing your work?
Well, you're right. I've published three memoirs. The first one was a book called From Our House. It's essentially about my father who suffered an accident when I was barely a year old. He was a farmer and he lost both of his hands in a farming accident, became an angry man. I was often the object of his anger. And the book is sort of about our journey toward acceptance of each other. It's a book. I was thinking about this earlier. It's a book I don't think I would have written if I hadn't read Tobias Wolff's This Boy's Life. Yeah. I heard Tobias Wolff read from that book in manuscript when he was down at OU Athens for their Spring Literary Festival. And it was an amazing experience for me. And I think that's what started me thinking, oh, it's okay to tell your own story on the page.
Lee Martin is on the faculty of the Department of English at The Ohio State University, and his new collection of stories is called The Mutual UFO Network. What's the street date of this?
June 12th.
June 12th. Look forward to that. Cassie Rose is here. She is WOSU's book critic. She was telling us off mic about a very funny book that she probably can't go into too much detail on the show, but what do you have for us today, Cassie? Because everybody, if Cassie recommends a book, you need to read the book. I'm saying that right now. So go ahead. Dazzle me.
Well, I'm going to start with this book, which is by Sloane Crosley. She's a humorist, and she has a book of essays out called Look Alive Out There. And I'm going to have to tell this one, because now that I started off the air about it, you're all looking at me like, okay. The thing about Sloane Crosley is that she can see humor in the daily life and in the ways that we see it, but we don't really embrace it like she does. And I was there is the story. The collection begins with a it's called On Wheels. And she takes on a woman in a wheelchair. Now, what happens is that they're in New York. She's in New York. She's trying to get a cab. And she was first in line. And now there's a woman in a wheelchair and a man is pushing the wheelchair in there. So a cab comes up. And so, of course, she lets the cab. It should be hers. But she gives it to the woman in the wheelchair. Only the man wheels the wheelchair up to the cab, kisses her, and then he himself gets into the cab.
And so, slug her right in the mouth.
So Sloane Crosley is saying, I don't think you can be handicapped by association. So she follows the woman down the sidewalk.
Wait, and, I have to, is this fiction?
No, no, okay. No. And so she doesn't, of course, you know, something happens and everybody's looking at her like, what are you doing? This woman is in a wheelchair. And that's, you know, the kind of humor that you get into because she gets herself into these bumbling situations. Now, there's another one, which is, you know, she moves into a new apartment in New York.
Someone's drowning a puppy, right?
No,
yeah, here we go.
Right. Well, no, there's a kid out her windows who's on viral videos on his phone, high volume, all day. Oh. All day. She says, you know, in New York, you live with noise. But this kid, his friends are over. It's constant noise out all beyond her windows. She yells out the window. She drops a note in the mailbox. She tries everything she can. She even thinks the kid is kind of cool. But she gets to a point where she can't live with it anymore. Long story short, she's in the hardware store and she finds a spotlight, you know, this big spotlight. So she places it out her window and just right on this teenage kid and turns it on, doesn't turn it off, you know, big bright spotlight. And the way it's just what she thinks of. She doesn't care what people think, but it's not a rude, I don't care what people think. It's just like, I got to deal with that, what I have to deal with here. And so she does.
But having lived in New York for many years, I am relating to a lot of what I'm hearing from that. Tell me, I don't know Sloane Crosley. Tell me about her.
Well, her first book, which was called I Thought There Would Be Cake, which is also very funny.
And there's it's about funerals, right?
The one I remember in there is the essay was The Pony Problem.
Oh.
I don't know about the cake. No, The Pony Problem, which is also very funny because it's about plastic ponies that she has in her kitchen drawer. And she has that moment where she leaves the apartment and she thinks, okay, what if I get hit by a bus and my mother comes and she's cleaning out my apartment and she sees this drawer of plastic, you know, cowboy ponies. And it's all about people who have been giving her these ponies because people say, oh, do you want to come to this party? And she said, yeah, are they going to be ponies? So people start giving her plastic ponies. So it's... She's really a great humorist, and she actually was a finalist for the Thurber Prize for that book, I think it was. Mm-hmm.
This show has just lost control. I mean, I don't know, but I'm going home to clean all the drawers in my house right now, and my mother's already in heaven. So thank you, Cassie. Well, Sloane Crosley, look alive out there, because I suspect people are going to be calling wanting to know more about this book.
Yes.
So it is Look Alive Out There by Sloane Crosley, and it's new. Is it a new?
Yes, it's new. It just came out, I think, a couple weeks ago.
Mm-hmm. It should be a quick pick at the Columbus Library. Speaking of which, Robin Nesbitt is here, manager of the Hilliard branch. Did your branch just have incredible renovation?
We are. Yeah. Thank you for teeing that up, Christopher. We are getting ready to open. So we are in our old building still. We will close that old building on June 6th, and we will open the brand new one on June 21st.
It has like a swimming pool and everything.
It had a swimming pool. Yes. It's got a pavilion out back and two stories. It's going to be lovely. It's tripling the size of our current location. So we're very excited about that. So everybody can come see us June 21st at 4 o'clock when the building actually opens that afternoon.
And that's just in time for Lee Martin's new book to be in hardcover.
That's
so
right.
That's right. Okay,
come
so
and get Lee's book at
we'll
the
have
library.
A big sale for that. That's right. So first of all, you come every week, thank goodness, to give us the latest Quick Picks. Review real quick what that is.
Right. So Quick Picks are bestsellers that basically are on the shelf. So you may have been waiting for it. You walk in, wow, there it is. You can check it out for 3 weeks, no renewals, no fines. But it's basically your lucky day. You come into the building, something you've been waiting on, and there it is waiting for you on the shelf. So
what's the latest hot Quick Picks?
Well, honestly, so I brought back one. So this one I had brought before, and I hadn't gotten around to reading it. Sometimes I Lie by Alice Feeney is amazing. So I really liked A Woman in the Window by A.J. Finn. That was my favorite thriller. That came out in January, and I was waxing poetic about it. This one, though, man. So Amber is the main character. She is wakes up in a hospital, and she can't move. She's basically in a medically induced coma, but she can hear what's going on. And the book weaves between a week ahead of time and current day. And I'm telling you, man, I got to the end of it. I had to read the last page twice because I was like, what? So if you like twists and thrills, this is a first novel. This woman is a journalist. Alice Feeney's British. She's a journalist. This is her first novel. Everybody that I have suggested to when we start talking about her, just like, oh my gosh, oh my gosh. So I just can't say enough about it. Sometimes I Lie by Alice Feeney.
Remind me of Woman in the Window, because my wife couldn't get into it.
And really?
She's okay. She's a real mystery thriller aficionado.
Woman in the Window is like Rear Window.
Right. Hitchcock. Right.
Yeah. So, I mean, again, it's another one where you're reading, you think you know what's going to happen. And again, these books are hard to talk about because you don't want to give too much away.
Right.
And I have read a lot of thrillers. And so what I look for anymore is something where I can't figure it out and I get to the and I'm like, basically, OMG, what happened? This the Woman in the Window is noirish, Hitchcock, set in New York City. A woman is kind of spying on this family across the way, and something's not quite all right there with her.
And she has a little bit
of a drinking problem. Yeah. She's got a her family is, we don't know what happened to her family, so.
Well, was it a year or so ago when you recommended Gone Girl, which was everybody was reading that at the same time, and there I picked it up, and there was a twist I certainly didn't see coming in that one.
Right,
so that's
the
kind of thing I really like, where I'm sort of knocked off the bed in shock about that kind of thing. So Alice Feeney is...
Alice Feeney, Sometimes I Lie. And this book, I actually liked the characters. Gone Girl, I didn't like the characters at all. I just wanted to see what would happen. Here, I actually feel for this woman. So,
well, he was stupid, and she was horrible in Gone Girl. Yeah, but
you
know, that's, you know, it's what's
life.
Ben Affleck or in the movie. Movie, whoever, what that
Rosamund Pike. Yeah.
Lee Martin, you brought a couple of books as well to talk about. One, I think, about a book club.
Yeah, I brought Ann Hood's The Book That Matters Most. Came out in 2016, I believe. I'm a little slow getting to some of the books that are out because I'm reading a lot of my students' work, et cetera, et cetera. But this is a book about a book club that a woman joins post-divorce. Her daughter is traveling in Europe, and what mom doesn't know is that her daughter has become drug addicted and needs rescuing. And the book club operates under the premise that each month one member of the club will choose for them to read the book that matters most to them. And
it's fiction.
It's fiction. Mm-hmm.
But the books they're reading are real books, yes?
Yes, they are. To Kill a Mockingbird. I'm trying to remember some of the
others. I'm just trying to think what each of us – that's a question for when we come back, what each of you would read about the books that mean the most of you. And we'll bring Kyle into the discussion, too, in the control room here on All Sides Weekend Books. We are talking with Cassie Rose, who is WOSU's book critic. We're talking with Lee Martin, whose new book, New Collection, is The Mutual UFO Network, which hits the street in June, and we're talking with Robin Nesbitt, the manager of the all-new Hilliard branch of the Columbus Library. She's back to give us quick picks, and we will be back in just a minute. We are back. I'm Christopher Purdy with All Sides Weekend, talking about books with Cassie Rose, who is WOSU's book critic, with Robin Nesbitt, the manager of the Hilliard branch of the Columbus Library, who brings us quick picks when she comes on the program, and Lee Martin from the Department of English at The Ohio State University, his latest collection of stories, The Mutual UFO Network. Let's play with that a little bit. In fact, let's maybe get some people to call in at 614-292-8513. What are the books that meant the most, that mean the most to you? I'm just curious. Make them up if you want to. Lee Martin, what are the books that mean the most to you?
Well, I already mentioned Tobias Wolff's This Boy's Life. I'll add, when I was young, a book that I absolutely loved was S.E. Hinton's The Outsiders. Mm-hmm. That was a huge book for me when I was a teenager. Professionally, a book that has really mattered a lot to me is Richard Ford's collection of stories, Rock Springs.
Yeah.
That was a book that told me it was possible to tell the stories of misfits and people on the outside and the people that I knew well from my rural Midwestern upbringing.
Did Richard Ford, is he the one who wrote the book about his mother?
Yes.
Who was sort of fading away, and it was a very... It was a troubled relationship, I think.
He actually had – the memoir came out last summer, I believe, and it's sort of like two memoirs, one about his mother and one about his father.
Yeah, right. That's right.
Cassie Rose, this is going to be great. Well, the books that really mean the most to you, just thinking
about
it. Oh,
boy, that's hard. That's really hard. I mean, going back to childhood, I mean, I can say the books like Harriet the Spy was a wonderful book. I mean, it was – that was about girl power. Also, there was a book called Upper Road Slowly, which I loved just because about the young girl and how she sort of blossoms in her identity when she goes to live with her aunt, if I recall correctly. It's kind of a difficult situation, The Phantom Toll Booth. Mm-hmm. But and also the Laura Ingalls Wilder's books. I mean, I was a great reader as a child, and those books just, I don't know, they mattered to me because they gave me a place to go when I was a young girl and
you need to go somewhere else when you're
young.
When you're an adult, you need to go somewhere else sometimes. I know my daughter loved the Laura Ingalls Wilder books.
Yeah.
They meant a lot to her as well.
As an adult, boy, that's tough. I mean, I can certainly look at books and say, you know, I've often mentioned Saul Bellow's book, Humboldt's Gift, which I just recently reread. Loved it because I used to live in Chicago, and it's based in Chicago in the 1970s. And that book and just Charlie Citrine and his all of the situation that he is involved in. Also a book, Michael Herr's Dispatches, which was Michael Herr was a journalist in the Vietnam War. And that book mattered to me because it told me a truth about the Vietnam War. And I had read a lot of books, certainly Tim O'Brien's The Things They Carried, Matterhorn. But that book kept me up till 1 o'clock in the morning because it was so real in terms of how it connected to the young boys. I mean, these were teenagers, 18-year-olds, 20-year-olds that were going off to war in a very difficult war, one that's not... Like, I mean, it's one war that we lost and it's
not healed yet.
Right. And I think it mattered to me because I was reading about it or not reading, but I was seeing it on the news and all the time. And that book really translated it for me.
And Robin Nesbitt, how about you?
It's Harriet the Spy.
Really?
My book. Yep. Yeah, Louise Fitzhugh. Really? I love that book. I don't know if I told the story on the air, but I had a copy when I was a kid, and it fell apart. And I remember hand binding it myself, using my dad's vice grips out on his tool bench and everything. So, yeah. But, yeah, that's my answer. That's my favorite book of all times.
The Wind in the Willows.
Yeah.
Kenneth Graham. The Wind in the Willows. And a Confederacy of Dunces, because that's me. I mean, I am Ignatius Riley. That's me. So if you want to read that, but with Me with My Valve, that's the complete thing by John Kennedy Toole. So if anyone out there wants to share the books that mean the most to you, we'd love to hear about it. 614-292-8513. You can also send an email to allsides@wosu.org. Now, Cassie, I want to ask you again. I'm still recovering from Ms. Crossley, Look Alive Out There, which I'm going to run to the library when we get off the air and get that book. What's next for your recommendations?
Well, there are two books that I very much want to recommend here. I think I will go down the path of a historical fiction. And it's Augustus by John Williams, our John Williams, who wrote Stoner.
Really?
Yes, this is the book. He wrote this after Stoner in 1972, and he won the National Book Award for it, although he shared it with John Barth Chimera. That was the book that he shared it with. So there were some judges that weren't quite in favor. But this is – it's a phenomenal book, and it is about Augustus Caesar, who ruled Rome. And it starts when he's young and all the way to the end of his rule. And there's, you know, a key scene in the very beginning. I mean, he's 19 years old when he becomes the emperor of Rome. Julius Caesar has been assassinated, and this rider comes up to him, this 19-year-old, and says, "You're now the ruler of Rome." And of course, he has a lot of, you know, Mark Antony doesn't believe that this is a good thing. Neither does Cassius and Brutus and all, but
the ones who killed Jesus.
Yeah. So here's this young boy. There's this moment that speaks to his integrity when he faces Mark Antony and he says, "In my uncle's will, every Roman citizen is supposed to get money." And he said, "You haven't mentioned it, nor have you delivered it." And Mark Antony is singing, "Who is this kid?" kind of thing. And he says, "If you do not do this, I am going to go in front of the Roman public and tell them about it and tell them I am going to give them the money from my own pocket." In that moment, I knew what kind of a ruler this was going to be.
Yeah.
And it takes you through the battles. It takes you through the politics, which are fascinating. It takes you through him dealing with the fact that everybody is against him, but most all of Rome is for him. I mean, he changes Rome. He brings peace to the Roman citizens, and he secures the borders from the barbarians. And you also get the story in here of Mark Antony and Cleopatra. So it's an epistolary novel. So it's written in letters and memoranda, and it is fascinating. I was totally involved in it, and I loved it.
Now, you mentioned earlier Stoner, and that is a novel that we've talked about, not lately, but we spent some time with that a couple mm-hmm. of years ago on this program. Mm-hmm. It was a novel that I didn't know. John Williams, to me, was either the composer or the classical guitarist. I didn't mm-hmm. know the writer, John Williams. I found Stoner incredibly memorable, very moving, very troubling in some ways. And I mean, and Lee, as an academic as well, because that's set in academia. I don't know if mm-hmm. you've read, if you're familiar with this novel, but if you are, I'd love to have you chime in on it. But just remind people about Stoner, John Williams.
It's about a young man who grows up on a farm in the Midwest, and his family, of course, wants him to, you know, inherit the farm. But he leaves and studies at a small college and falls in love with literature and becomes a professor. Mm. It's a very simple story. And on that baseline, you would think, well, there's not much here. I mean, he gets married and he has children and he settles down. But what goes on here is that he gets involved in, I mean, there's certainly politics and academia, and he holds firm to who he is. And a lot of times in the book, it looks like he's choosing failure, or he is a failure, but he's not. Mm. And I wrote a blog post on it, and I titled it "When Failure Means Success," because that's what you see in this character Stoner, is that he is a success because he holds to his integrity and to his beliefs, and he does what's right.
But he doesn't realize that.
I don't think he does.
He suffers a lot in the book.
He does, I think.
But I was very moved by that.
Mm-hmm. I know the book, but I don't know it well enough to add anything.
Okay. Well, I would recommend that, too, just to throw in another recommendation. If you haven't read Stoner by John Williams, mm-hmm. Pick up Augustus first. But Stoner is something that should be on everybody's back burner, at least. So, Robin Nesbitt, dazzle us with some quick picks.
So, this is what I find amazing. Mary Higgins Clark is still writing. So, I don't know if she's in her 90s yet or not. Mm. But she's got another one coming out April 3rd. It's another thriller. 18-year-old throws a party, Carrie Dowling, and then all of a sudden she's discovered lifeless at the bottom of the swimming pool. So,
gee,
you know, okay, there you are, right? Queen of suspense, though. I mean, I can't even imagine how many books Mary Higgins Clark has sold. But like I said, she's still turning them out. It'd be interesting to know. I hope she's still writing them. I know her daughter has written some things, but these still circulate like nobody's business. She still has a fan following. So, because this one says it's got over 300 holds on it. So, yeah.
Well, yeah. Mary, tell me the title again.
It's called "I've Got My Eyes on You" by Mary Higgins Clark,
and she is a very prolific writer.
Correct.
She's on top of a lot of people's lists.
I'd say every year she puts out one.
Good for her.
Yep.
Yeah,
hasn't she been writing with her daughter too?
So
isn't there a collaboration?
She was. They did a few things together. I haven't seen anything recently. Those weren't as good, I think, as just Mary by herself. So, I haven't seen anything with Carol for a while. Yeah.
And far be it from me to recommend a gossipy and fun read, but this is brand new. It's called Jackie, Janet, and Lee. It's about Jacqueline Onassis, her sister, the princess, Lee Radziwill, and their mother, Janet Auchincloss. And the dynamic, Janet Auchincloss, the mother, you know, she was a little bit under the radar, but she was certainly part of the whole Kennedy mystique. And what was interesting, at the end of her life, Jackie's mother said that my one regret in my whole life was Aristotle Onassis coming into the lives of both of my daughters, that he was just an absolute wreck. You know, it was just I didn't know that Jacqueline Onassis had other siblings besides Lee Radziwill, because her mother subsequently remarried and had two more children. And there's a whole interesting family dynamic. It is a gossipy read, yes, but it's also very, very interesting. And if you're Boston Irish like me and your grandmother had a picture of JFK in the kitchen like mine did, you might find that kind of an interesting read. I put that out there for what it's worth. We have a call from Harold in Columbus. Hello, Harold. You're on.
Yeah, I would highly, I know you mentioned the Little House on the Prairie book.
Yes.
I highly recommend it because they are not fiction. You know, they're true stories about how people really lived in that era. I mean, I remember one of them where they, Big Buy was a kitten. They got a kitten for a dime, and they knew they paid the, they made their money because the kitten had a mouse like in 5 minutes. they are just fascinating stories about how people really lived in that time.
These are the Laura Ingalls Wilder books, yes. The Little House on the Prairie series, right. Thank you, Harold, for that. I appreciate that very much. As I said, those are books when my daughter was young, she was devoted to, and I think we still have them there. So those are. And she apparently was a very interesting woman, Laura Ingalls Wilder. I think there was recently published quite a scholarly biography about her. That was.
And I think it won the National Book Critics Circle Award for fiction, or for nonfiction, excuse me.
I think that might be right. I can't remember.
It did win a major award. It was either the National or the National Book Critics Circle, because I remember seeing it and thinking I should pick up this book because I've been watching it and I would. I think it's a good one.
I have to ask Lee Martin the question that I'm sure he doesn't. They all hate this question, but I'm just going to ask anyway. With all of the books you're writing and the fact that you're teaching and you have to read students' work, what is really informing your own work, your own writing? Where do you get your stories from? Where do you get your novels from?
Well, my novels usually come from real events that I then fictionalize. The Bright Forever, for example, was based upon the true story of the abduction of a young girl in a small town close to where I lived when I was a teenager.
Which is where? But I'm just curious.
Lawrenceville, Illinois, right across the river from Vincennes, Indiana. My first novel was a historical novel about 1920s Texas, a book called Quaker Town.
I remember that one very well, yes.
When I write short stories, I often call upon just sort of closely observed details from things around me. For example, the story in the new collection called Across the Street. I did at one time live across the street from a disturbed man who would lie in the middle of the street at night to look up at the stars. So I just take things like that and then let my imagination run wild with them.
How do you balance the I'm curious because you have to read a lot of students' work, which we all know would be much of it's wonderful. Let's face it.
It is.
So it's very rewarding to you. But does that drain you in a way that makes it harder to write your own work?
Oh, no, not at all. Okay. It's quite the opposite.
Good.
I think one of the reasons I became a writer was I heard a sound when I read something on the page and I wanted to be able to answer back and respond to it by making a sound of my own. So anything I'm reading, student work or otherwise, is inspiring to me, and I use that as I go back into my writing room.
We're talking with Lee Martin, who is a member of the faculty in the Department of English at The Ohio State University, a prolific writer himself. His new collection, The Mutual UFO Network, is coming out in June. You shouldn't miss it. It is a riveting read. Cassie Rose is WOSU's book critic. Her blog is thelongestchapter.com. And Robin Nesbitt is the manager of the Columbus Library, the Hilliard branch, the new Hilliard branch. You're moving into in another 2 months.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
That move is going to be what? What's going to happen going from one taking everything from one building to another.
Yeah, so we'll close on June 6th because we have to move the collection from the old building. And then we also have to interfile because we refresh about 10 to 15%. So there will be about 14 pallets of new books that will come to the new building. And then we have to interfile those two collections in the
building. Are you going to stay home for that or do you have to?
Oh,
because you're
no.
the boss.
I'm going to set up a cot. I'll be there all the time.
You'll be like, okay, we have a call from Justin in Columbus with some recommendations. Hi, Justin. Go ahead.
Hi, thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure.
I wanted to just mention a couple books really fast that were really important to me in my young adulthood. The first is Stephen King's magnum opus, the Dark Tower series.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Which just amazing character development throughout. I really loved. My other one is A Walk in the Woods by Bill Bryson, where he kind of takes on the Appalachian Trail. And then my third one is, well, I like anything by this author, Rant by Chuck Palahniuk, really kind of was an awesome book for me to read. So I'll take the response off the air. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Justin. I appreciate that. Rant. I should write that. I should
the
write that
guy
one
that
down.
Wrote that Fight good. Club.
Fight
yeah,
Club,
yeah.
Yeah.
Bill Bryson, of course, is a very prolific writer. He does travel. He does all kinds of things. A Walk in the Woods was a wonderful book, too. I remember that as well.
He's got some great stuff out. Summer of 1927, and then he's got...
What's the one about England?
That he, small
Island.
Yeah, notes on a Small Island or Small Notes on an Island. And then he just reprised that. Like, he went back, did the same trip, like, 20 years later, something like that, recently. So.
There's a part in The Walk in the Woods where he a buddy joins him for part of the walk of the Appalachian Trail, and the buddy's luggage outfalls like pounds and pounds of Milky Way bars.
Yeah.
And the guy apparently has a tummy on him, and like, how is this guy not going to have a stroke walking this trail? But apparently, all was well. We are going to take another break, and then we're going to come back and talk more with Cassie Rose, with Lee Martin, and with Robin Nesbitt. And if you'd like to join the Yak here, the Ranch, 614-292-8513. Don't go away. Maybe it's a relief to many to know this is the final segment on today's edition of All Sides Weekend Books. I'm Christopher Purdy with Lee Martin, Cassie Rose, and Robin Nesbitt. And Lee, you were recommending an author. If you like Bill Bryson, you would have...
Oh, I was remembering William Lee Seat Moon's book, Blue Highways, came out in the early 80s, I believe. The story of him traveling the country by the way of all the secondary roads, which used to be marked in blue on the highway maps.
We have a call from Sean in Granville. Hi, Sean. Go ahead.
Hi, guys. Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
You know, I live out in Granville, but I commute to work in Columbus. So most of my reading is either it's sort of abbreviated. I either read a lot of poetry or I typically read a lot of comic books.
Good.
And there's a comic series right now by an author named Tom King, and he's been writing a story about Mr. Miracle that has just been the best comic reading I've read probably in the last 3 or 4 years. It's well worth picking up. I'm sure it'll be collected soon and probably at the library.
What's it about?
So Mr. Miracle is a character that was created by Jack Kirby when he was working at DC Comics in the late 70s, and Mr. Miracle is an escape artist. So he's like, he's a god, but he's an escape artist. And so this current series, Tom King, the writer, he's a veteran of the war in Iraq, and so he's writing a lot about PTSD. And in this series, Mr. Miracle is at the same time taking over as the High Father of the planet where he came from, while they're fighting a war against another planet, while he is really suffering from some mental illness, and while his wife is going to have their first baby. It's all happening simultaneously.
Okay, been there. Okay, so it's Mr. Miracle. That is a comic series. Sean in Granville recommends that. Thank you so much. Mr. Miracle has a lot going on. Thank you very much for the recommendation. We have a recommendation from, I think, Rez in Columbus. Hi, are you there?
I'm here.
Go ahead.
I had two. One is serious, and that's The Wave by Todd Strasser.
Mm-hmm.
That was one that I got when I was in high school, and I'm in my 40s now, so it's pretty old. but it's a really good book. It's based on a real story of a experiment that happened at a high school regarding, of all things, Nazism.
Mm-hmm.
I highly recommend that to anybody that wants to read. anybody wants to read something kind of serious about how peer pressure affects society and how people can be influenced into doing things that they really maybe shouldn't be doing without realizing it.
Sounds like bullying in a way that we deal with today. Yeah. Okay. And what else?
The other one is The Unexpected Mrs. Polyfax by Jesse Gilman.
Yeah.
That sounds like you know that one.
Yep. It's a good series. Yep.
Oh, I love Mrs. Polifax. My mother introduced me to her, and she's amazing.
She was a detective, right, Mrs. Polifax? Wasn't she?
Yeah. No, she was a spy.
Oh, spy. Oh.
She was an old lady who went to her doctor at the very beginning of the first book. She goes to her doctor, and her doctor tells her, "You're in perfect shape." And she goes, "Oh, that's nice." And he's like, "Well, shouldn't you be excited about this? You're, like, really old. You should be excited. You're yourself." And it's...
You're breaking up a little bit, but we have recommendations of The Res and The Unexpected Mrs. Polifax. Thank you very much for those recommendations. I'm sorry I had to move on, but you were breaking up, and I wanted to make sure we got everybody in. And we have a call from Barb in Columbus. Barb, hello.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, how are you? Go ahead.
I've got two recommendations.
Good.
One is The Diary of an Old Soul by George MacDonald, a Scottish poet who influenced C.S. Lewis.
Oh.
It's marvelous, marvelous prose, very rich. One of my favorites of his is God is gloriously wasteful, throwing sunset after sunset out of his windowsill. And then the other one is written by a Russian author, and I don't have the book in front of me, but the book is The Sportsman's Notebook. And it was translated into English, and it's just marvelous in terms of the rich detail of Russian countryside and all the characters.
Lee Martin is nodding in recognition.
Well, I believe that's Turgenev, if I'm remembering correctly.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for the recommendation, and thank you for calling. You're listening to All Sides Weekend Book, and Cassie Rose has a provocative choice for us, a recommendation. Let's talk about some more.
Well, this is a really good book, and I'm going to preface this by saying, in case I lose control here, that I have written about it on the blog. So,
TheLongestChapter.com.
Yes. It's called The Theory of Bastards by Audrey Shulman. And it takes place in the near future, and you know that because the people have bodyware, which is they have implants, so they don't have they don't have cell phones, they don't have laptops, so all of that technology is happening with the bodyware.
And that's gonna hurt.
But that's not showcased, so you don't have, it's not science fiction. Anyway, this researcher comes to a foundation in the Midwest, and she is a MacArthur Foundation fellow, and she is there to observe the bonobos and their mating behavior. So a bonobo is – people probably think they look like chimpanzees.
Okay.
But they're bonobos. I couldn't tell you the difference. But anyway, she's – the book starts slowly. She's – because she's observing these bonobos, and then a huge dust storm comes in, a blinding dust storm, and everybody has to evacuate, and she and this other researcher stay behind. That's kind of when the book picks up because all the technology shuts down.
Interesting. Oh.
And then they have to evacuate to find food and water after the storm is over. And it's sort of a mini Cormac McCarthy, The Road.
Oh, interesting.
Or Cormac McCarthy, The Road. So it's, you have to stick with it, though. It's because it starts slowly. I have to say about page 70, I thought, is this really going to pick up? But what Audrey Shulman does here is that she gets you so invested in this protagonist, Frankie, and also the bonobos, who are really funny, and you get this understanding of them, their loyalty, and they just do things like there's one that drinks dishwashing liquid and blows bubbles. And there's, you know, another one that likes to play basketball and do, free throw shots. And, you know, and that same one, her name is Adele.
Anybody in a wheelchair? You're on a roll today, Kat.
And so by the end of the book.
Is it science fiction?
It's not.
Okay.
It's not. Even in the press release, they say it's not science fiction. It's not dystopian. Mm-hmm. It's just that edge of the future where we are so dependent on the technology.
Right.
And there is a message there that says we are helpless without our technology. Hmm. And there's a little bit of piece of that message that is frightening.
Interesting.
In a way, because also they have avatars. So, for example, on a show like this, Christopher, we wouldn't have you. We would have an avatar.
Big avatar.
Us.
Okay. Yeah.
So it's a little unsettling on that, especially if you pick up the phone afterwards and get in a, on the phone, and you get in one of those menus and you have basically what an air quote, an avatar on the phone trying to talk to you about.
Well, where would I be if there was an avatar here?
Well,
I don't know how this works.
Well, they have here, there's a mention that factory workers are replaced by apps.
Yeah.
But again, she does. That's it's not science fiction because she doesn't dwell on that. That's not the story. The story is about the research of the bonobos and then the emergency that happens with the dust storm.
So she weaves a lot together in this book.
She does.
Yeah. Okay.
She does. And by the end of it, boy, I just love this book.
The title again?
It's called The Theory of Bastards.
And the author?
Audrey Shulman.
Did you know anything about her before?
I did not.
No. Okay.
No. And this is her fifth book.
Wow. Oh, wow. All right. Well, she's someone we're going to have to pay attention to. We have a call from Linda in Grove City. Hi, Linda. Go ahead. Oh, Linda, I hung up on you accidentally. I'm sorry. Call back. We'll try to get you in. My apologies. My bad. All right. How about another quick pick? I see you have Meg Wolitzer, and that's getting a lot of attention.
Yep. Mm-hmm. So Meg Wolitzer, who wrote The Interestings, which was really good, is now out with The Female Persuasion. And so, you know, Meg is probably one of our finest female authors right now. This book is about a freshman, college freshman, who meets her professor, Faith Frank, and has a longtime relationship. I haven't actually read the book. I heard Meg interviewed the other day on a podcast or something like that. So it sounds really intriguing, but I think it's, you know, a young college freshman, this woman, Faith, who's 63. So it's a feminist novel about, you know, relationships and just what it means to be influenced by somebody in the world and stuff like that. But yeah, I think this has been 3 or 4 years in the making. It's been a while since the Interestings came out. So I think this one would be a good one to read. Check out.
But I think that was a front page of the New York Times.
Yeah, I think you're right.
A featured review that got very, very enthusiastic coverage.
It's been on the list for all the hot spring reads. I'm sure it'll make it onto a best of list at the end of the year and everything like that.
The title again?
The title is The Female Persuasion.
By Meg Wolitzer.
Meg Wolitzer, correct.
Now, there's a lot going on at the library. You have a series of Sunday afternoon lectures that are hard to get into now. You have to get there early.
The Carnegie Author Series, the third author is coming in May. Sandra Cisneros will be May 20th. Go to the library's website, columbuslibrary.org, because you do need to register. Also, a week before the event, we have a book club where you can come down and chat about her work. So she's the third one. We had Jane Smiley earlier in the year. We had David Levithan, and now Sandra Cisneros, and then Terry McMillan at the end of the year.
So and they all go clean. You can't. You have to register.
Correct.
They're free, but you have to let them know you're coming.
Correct.
Because
go to the website.
We only have so many chairs.
That's right.
It's a big place, but it's
got so many chairs. Exactly.
Terry McMillan must have been very good.
She's coming. She's in the
David
fall.
Levithan. I'm sorry to have missed that because I bet he was compelling.
He had a good crowd. Yeah.
Yeah, I bet he
and
did.
I'm sure Sandra will pull in a great crowd as well.
Okay. Yeah. You're listening to All Sides Weekend on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about books today with Robin Nesbitt from the Hilliard Branch of the Columbus Library, with Lee Abbott, a writer who is also on the faculty, the English faculty at The Ohio State University, and our book critic Cassie Rose. Her blog is thelongestchapter.com. Lee Abbott, do you have any time to actually read for your own pleasure? And if so, what are you reading?
I don't know if Lee Abbott in New Mexico has time, but Lee Martin.
I just called you Lee Abbott, didn't
that's okay. That's
who just married Natalie Walston, right? Never
that's
mind.
Right.
My old colleague, Lee Martin.
Right. What am I reading for pleasure? I'm reading right now Nice People, New and Selected Stories by David Jouse. These are stories of ordinary people, very closely observed, with beautiful prose and moments of truth that will just knock you off your chair.
Who is the writer?
David Jouse.
I know, but tell me about him.
Oh, David? David used to teach at the University of Arkansas in Little Rock. He teaches now in the low residency MFA faculty at Vermont College of Fine Arts. He's a past winner of the Associated Writing Program's Award for Short Fiction. He's primarily known as a short story writer. His stories have been in Best American Short Stories, et cetera.
You said earlier that in some short stories, your own and others, sometimes very little actually happens. Do you feel pressured when you're writing to, or do you want when you're reading to make things happen, to make them get out of the car and understand why they got into the car, or does that even matter? I'm finding it does not, but I'm just curious.
Well, Eudora Welty said once that the hardest thing about writing was to get somebody to move from one room to another room, right?
Right.
I mean, I'm interested in things happening. I like there to be a little bit of an element of mystery to a story. But as I'm getting older, I'm finding that I'm really interested in what's happening inside the head of the characters, sort of in the Virginia Woolf kind of way.
So you have to invent or assume someone else's voice as well when you're writing.
Yeah, absolutely. I was just talking about this the other day with my wife. When I was a kid, I was always imitating people I heard on television, et cetera. Like one day I'd watched an old Western and my grandmother called me in for lunch. And when I finished the meal, I said to her, "Much obliged for the vittles, ma'am." And she looked at me like, "Oh, who is this kid?" So, yeah, I think a writer is a good mimic.
Yeah, yeah. Cassie Rose, give me another recommendation.
Speaking of books that are, you're within the character's head, this is a book that is like that. It's called Basic Black with Pearls. It's by Helen, I think it's Weinzweig, but it looks like Weinzweig, but it's Weinzweig. And it is about a woman who is involved with a spy who is from the agency. We don't really know what he does, but she travels the world to be with him. And they communicate through messages in National Geographic. So he will leave a copy of the magazine at a hotel for her, and she will then figure out where she can meet him. And she doesn't know anything about him, but she pretty much has dedicated her life to being with him. And the book opens when she's in the tropics, and she can't figure out. She has yet to meet him. And then she gets a phone call from him, and he says, "You need to go to Toronto." And she pushes back, saying, "That's where I live." And he says, "That's where my next assignment is." And so she goes there. Now, this is not a traditional spy novel. This is really about her and her internal thinking and what's going on with her life, because we know that she's married and she has children. So there's this wondering of, well, if she's going home, where's the husband, where are the children, what's going on with that? And you really don't find out until the end. But it's all about the fact that this story about how she has dedicated her middle-aged life to following this man whom she loves. And now in Toronto, there's this question of what's going on, because she can't figure out the clues. She doesn't get a National Geographic at the hotel. She gets a flyer from a botany convention that's going on at the hotel. So it's very short. It's about 150 pages. And I loved it just because of her and what's going on with her and what she discovers about herself. She also meets people in Toronto that she thinks are Conrad, because he is very adept at disguises. And so we get some stories about other people that she has run into, and she thinks it's him, and she follows them and ends up in a situation. It's a very good book, Basic Black with Pearls.
It's a great title.
It is, because that's how she's dressed.
Yeah.
And it came out in 1980. It's a New York Review of Book Classics book, which they have just brought out
series.
Again.
I love that series. It's a wonderful series. Yeah. Stoner is in that series.
Yes,
that's
it is.
That's how a lot of us rediscovered that book. One book I want to recommend, because I sort of half tease about my own background, is a new book, a nonfiction book by Kevin Tullis called My Father's Wake, which is about the Irish culture of death and being laid out and what it meant to his father's family in recent years. It's something that you might think is an archaic thing, but no, the whole ritual thing about it. And it is not a book about looking at a corpse, although that is part of it. It's the whole cultural aspect of what that's like and what that means. And I found it very, very compelling. Again, My Father's Wake by Kevin Tullis. We have about 2 minutes left for everybody to give us a last stand, starting with a last quick pick.
I'm sure nobody will be surprised that A Higher Loyalty by James Comey is a quick pick.
Yes.
So that came out last week. I actually had a customer, the door was barely open at 9 o'clock, and he was running in to get it. So
did he get it? Was it?
He did. We got it. We pulled it out of the box and made sure it was checked in, and off he went.
They're on Tuesdays. Explain how that works.
So Tuesday morning, because new books are released on Tuesday in this country. And so the quick pick, any new quick pick that's coming out Tuesday morning at 9 o'clock, hits your library. That's when we put them out.
So. Okay, yep. I know I'm on the reserve list, and I'm like 940 on the reserve list.
Oh, great.
For that. And I might walk into Whetstone and find a quick
exactly.
pick. You never know.
That's
I found a few things
right.
that way. Lee Martin, a final recommendation from you.
Kent Harif's final novel, Our Souls at Night.
Oh, Our Souls at Night by who again?
Kent Harif.
Kent Harris, okay. And Cassie Rose, give me one more.
I'm going to recommend The Friend by Sigrid Nunez.
Say it again.
The Friend by Sigrid Nunez.
The Friend by Sigrid Nunez. Those are our recommendations today. This has been All Sides Weekend on 89.7 NPR News, talking about books with Cassie Rose. Thank you, Cassie Rose, WOSU's book critic. Her blog is thelongestchapter.com. Thank you, Lee Martin. His new book is A Mutual UFO Network. And thank you, Robin Nesbitt, getting ready to move to Hilliard Branch of the Columbus Library. I'm Christopher Purdy. My thanks to our producer, Kyle McKinnon, the All Sides intern, our Michael Lee, Alexandra Hulvacek, and Martin Coleman, with video production by Rich Blue and Amber Blue. Alan DeCenzo is the composer of our theme music. WOSU News and Public Affairs Director Mike Thompson, Radio Operations Director Kevin Matrilla, Senior Broadcast Technician Eric French. I'm Christopher Purdy. Thank you for joining us.